the four words global markets are focused on this morning.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts designed with convenient features to help reach savings goals. To learn more or open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and there was a lot of interesting stuff in last night's debate, but one word caught the attention of global markets this morning: sequester, as in the package of cuts expected if we go over the so-called fiscal cliff at the end of this year. Here's what President Obama said.
First of all, the sequester is not something that I proposed. It's something that Congress has proposed. It will not happen.
It will not happen. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has more on those four provocative words.
Sequestration isn't exactly a breakfast-time word, so here's a quick explainer. It came about in 2011 as part of the debt ceiling deal. If Congress doesn't cut the budget deficit on its own by January, brutal automatic cuts kick in, slicing $500 billion from defense and an equal amount from domestic programs. There's plenty for Democrats and Republicans to hate about it.
Certainly everyone understands that it'd almost be economic suicide to allow the full impact to take place.
Neil McKinnon is with VTB Capital in London, where market watchers worry the cuts could damage the U.S. economy and ripple across the world. But to avoid the cuts, as President Obama vowed last night, Republicans and Democrats have to make a deal to trim the deficit between now and January. So far, they've been deadlocked. Republicans have dug in their heels on cutting military budgets, and Democrats want higher taxes for the wealthy. So stopping the cuts will take much more than four words from the president on a debate stage. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Today, Facebook is set to release its second quarterly earnings report since going public back in May. Its shares are down nearly 50% since then. And Marketplace's Bob Moon reports those shares could fall further later this week.
Facebook executives keep scrambling to show Wall Street they can unlock the profit potential in close to a billion active users. But payday is almost here already for some Facebook employees whose compensation in stock had been locked down until now. In the coming days, they'll get their first chance to cash in. Good news for many newly minted millionaires. Maybe not so much for investors who've watched the initial share value shrink by almost half.
A lot of shares are going to get dumped on the market at once. It's going to take a lot of buyers to absorb that supply.
Wedbush Securities research analyst Michael Pachter says that's bound to keep prices under pressure, with more than 200 million additional shares flooding the market. At the Motley Fool investment website, Eric Bleeker thinks investors who've been waiting for share values to recover may find this yet another reason to unload their shares.
Negativity is built into Facebook stock right now. There's a lot of pessimism. These storylines build upon themselves.
California officials, on the other hand, are upbeat. They're expecting to collect $1 billion in taxes on the windfall. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning. Tokyo up just a hair, London down 0.7%. In addition to Facebook, we'll get earnings today from UPS. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow inched up 2 points to close at 13,345.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank, FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts with a competitive variable interest rate and convenient access via phone or web. Link your existing bank accounts without switching banks. To learn how this FDIC-insured high-yield savings account can complement your savings goals and to open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
There's a new book out this morning that sheds some light on the downfall of a company that was a household name all across the country, Circuit City, which was founded by Samuel Wurzel back in 1949 and went bust in 2009. The author of the book is Wurzel's son, Alan, who ran Circuit City for 13 years before retiring in 1986. The book is called Good to Great to Gone. Alan Wurzel, good morning.
Good morning.
So when we look at the retailers that went under during the Great Recession, I think of big ones like Linens and Things, Borders, and, of course, Circuit City. So why do you think Circuit City is on that list?
I think it's on the list for three reasons, and it sort of declined in three phases. The first is that in the early 90s, Best Buy and the mass merchants began gaining market share. Then the second step was when my successor, who let this happen, retired. His successor couldn't galvanize himself or the organization to set a strategic plan that was commensurate with the threat that Circuit City faced. And when the recession of 2008 hit, the cupboard was bare, Circuit City had no cash in the bank, and nobody wanted to come rescue the company, and therefore it fell into bankruptcy and was liquidated.
Now, you were gone by the time that happened, but was there an emotional response from you to this company that you had helped build liquidating, going under completely?
Absolutely. I say it's like losing a child. And the reason I wanted to write this book was to find out what happened to my child. Why did it die? And so I interviewed up to 40 or 50 people that were still there in the last 10 years of Circuit City's existence. Went through a lot of SEC and annual reports to try to understand in a serious and academic, objective way what happened to the company.
Do you think that the basics of selling a product to a customer have changed since you got into the business several decades ago?
Absolutely. When we started, people never owned a TV before. This was a major family purchase, similar to buying a car today. It was a major expenditure relative to family income. By the 80s, and certainly by the 90s, people had owned one, two, or three television sets. Buying the next one was not as nearly as scary. Besides that, there was a tremendous amount of information now available online, I mean, to find out the product they wanted without the intervention of a salesperson.
So you don't need that reassurance as much anymore these days.
Correct. And today, the largest retailer of TV and appliances in America is Amazon, where you never talk to anybody.
Alan Wurtzel is the author of Good to Great to Gone, the 60-year rise and fall of Circuit City. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And finally, to a new study from the Pew Research Center that finds 60% of Americans aged 16 to 29 still go to libraries. According to the New York Times, they use libraries to do research, borrow books, and to read newspapers and magazines. What I'd like to know is how many of those 16 to 29-year-olds still know how to use a microfiche reader or even have any clue what one is. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. On APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.